One, two, three. This is Dr. Alex Avila with Love University, and we're back. Every week we talk about how to love yourself, others, and a higher nature. I'm an author, psychologist, and speaker. And we're at the LA Times Festival of Books at USC, Los Angeles, California. We're live here. We're having a great time with a lot of great fans and guests and people that are coming to see us. And we have a very interesting guest today. This is Mr. Noah Nelson, who's an expert on immersion. We're going to talk about that interesting concept. He's the founder and editor and chief of No Proscenium, that deals with immersive experiences, immersive theater, visual reality, escape rooms, action role-playing. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Doctor.
Now tell us a little bit about immersion in a basic sense, and then we'll go a little deeper. What does it mean to be immersed? Because I think of it as something that's a very absorbing involvement in something, like getting into it deeply. My son likes to travel to foreign countries just for the spur of the moment to learn the language. He immerses himself in that culture. So tell us, what does immersive mean?
Okay, so there's the colloquial sense of immersive, right? So we all know when something is immersive that we get lost in it, right?
Yes.
Everywhere you look, everything you're thinking about, you're just completely lost in it. When we're talking about immersive design, which is what our focus is at No Proscenium, we're talking about immersive entertainment or immersive education, anything where people are not just using it as a marketing term. I find that people tend to use it like sriracha. They just want to put it on everything, thinking it's going to enhance the flavor of the experience. What we're talking about is a design philosophy that is all about creating a sense of presence, creating, enabling people to not just lose themselves in an experience, but to find themselves in an experience. In immersive design, probably the thing most people are going to be familiar with is theme parks, right? Mm. Someplace like Disney, Universal, you know, a design space that's been consciously crafted in order to create certain effects. That's not the only form it takes. There's escape rooms, there's immersive theater. On the digital side, you get virtual reality, augmented reality. And in all these cases, it's about going beyond just telling a story, going beyond presenting things or performing at people, but instead engaging. When someone's doing immersive design right, they're thinking about the relationship of the participants to the material. They're dealing with people's agency. They're asking, what is the role of the audience in this world? Mm. And that role shouldn't just be shut up and listen. Mm. That role needs to be, on some level, empowered.
Interesting.
So that's the core of it.
That's pretty good. Now, are you a designer? What do you actually do?
This is a good question. So about 5 years ago, I'm a weird duck in that I have sort of two identities. Yes. I'm a journalist by day, and I'm a theater weirdo by night.
Okay.
That's how I like to talk about it. I have a Bachelor of Arts degree in theater. I studied directing, I studied acting. And the entire time I was doing that in college, I was also working as a radio journalist.
Oh, wow.
So I was reporting on, you know, I had stories on NPR, on Marketplace. You know, I visited the Annenberg School of Journalism here for journalism reasons.
Yes.
I didn't go here, but like I would visit friends working on stuff. About 5 years ago, I had been covering what was at the time known as the transmedia sort of scene. And this is where people were really trying to figure out how to make stories with the internet. A lot of stuff around alternate reality games, which were at the time being used as ways to promote movies. There's a lot of money going into this and sort of people being tapped to figure out, well, what's going to be the next thing in storytelling? How does the internet tell stories? Mm. When that One thing that came up interesting in that is like some of these alternate reality games, they would culminate in a live experience. Mm. There was one called Year Zero, which was for the band Nine Inch Nails, and it culminated in a secret concert for the people who had followed along on the adventure, and that secret concert got broken up by the cops, put that all in quotes, in order to give people the sense that like they were part of this like underground movement that was going on. But they were rewarded with like a real concert. So these sort of things, the people who are designing this stuff, some of us were really interested in the theatrical nature of it because they were theater nerds at heart. And so we were starting to look at what could we do to sort of, from our point of view, cut to the chase. How could we just get to the live part? Because that's something we were excited about. Like, we weren't necessarily excited about people calling us in the middle of the night or like an endless stream of like emails back and forth between a character. Mm-hmm. It was that moment when you stopped reading about that world and walked into that world. And suddenly there was a character in front of you.
I'm thinking a couple of things. I think you said something about the inner dialogue is replaced by the character's dialogue. Now, thinking like someone that goes to mystery dinner theater, for example, you know, they're like part of the presentation, you know, so they're interactive. So, and you talk about the benefits of immersive experiences. For example, what can it do for individuals? What can it do for society? Can there be benefits from this? Can it be more enjoyment and pleasure? Can people connect more with themselves and others?
Right. probably the most interesting thing about immersive design right now, particularly on the theater side, is there are people who are working at rewriting the social contracts. I've got a couple of examples here. There's a piece here in LA and sometimes elsewhere called Red Flags. It's designed, it's set up is as a blind date. And that blind date is with a character named Emma. And it's designed to be like the worst date you've ever been on. Emma is one of those people that you can't get a word in edgewise. Absolutely everything that you talk to her about gets turned around about the bad day that she's having. And so it's perfectly designed to be this like sort of disaster. But what's interesting about the structure of it and how the lead writer has constructed it is that she's relying upon the social scripts that are in our lives in order to create the illusion of reality inside a narrative experience. And one of the fun things is like people will come out of that experience, and oftentimes in immersive you'll have people go and they want to connect with other people who've been through it, sort of talk
well,
and share
let me
notes.
Take you back. So no, are you saying this is a real date you go on, or
no,
show, you're watching a movie or something?
No, you're not watching a movie, you're not watching a show. It's not a real date though, but it's structured like a date.
So do you have like goggles on?
No, this is a person, there's an actor there.
Okay, so an actor.
So you show up at a place.
Yes.
So beforehand you'll have been texting with them.
Okay.
And then you show up at the bar, or if you're meeting on the street, first time it was done, it was at the Hollywood Fringe Festival.
Yes.
So you might like meet outside one of the venues.
Okay.
And like there's the actor who's playing Emma.
So are you paying this person, or are you paying, is this?
Yeah, it's a ticketed show.
Oh, so it's a show.
It's a ticketed show, yeah. Okay. It's a ticketed show in the sense that you buy a ticket,
right.
There is a script.
Okay.
You're not necessarily aware that there's a script.
Ah.
And it's written in such a way that you can think you're having a conversation, but the actor is facile enough and a good enough improviser that they're able to bend it back onto the monologue that they're having.
Okay.
Because the character they're playing is one of those people where if you start talking about like, oh yeah, you know, I had a bad day, you know, yesterday, like I had to take my cat to the vet or whatever, they will instantly start talking about their sick dog. You know, they won't be interested in you anymore. It's all about them. So it's like, and this the show's called Red Flags. And so it's meant to be a bad date with one of those people.
Well, why would anyone pay for a bad date?
Because it's hilarious.
Oh, really?
Right? So the show's actually, it's hilarious, it's disturbing, it's funny.
So it's a one-on-one show, you're saying?
Yeah, it's a one-on-one show.
Wow, it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
So basically, you know it's going to be a bad date in the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And you just are being entertained by the bad date.
You're on it, you're entertained by what they're doing. You're getting drawn into their world. Like, the thing about this stuff, particularly the one-on-one experiences, is the core agency you get there is an emotional agency. Mm. One way to think about it is you're kind of directing the tone of the show based on your reaction. When you get a really good immersive actor opposite you, they're reading you. They're responding to what they're doing. What you're doing. They might have a script, and they usually do have a script, but they're shaping their performance moment to moment based on how you're reacting to the script. So if you're horrified by what they're saying, the way in a real conversation, if you want to win someone's sympathies back and what you're saying is horrifying the person,
right.
If your goal is to like get them on your side, tailor what you're doing in order to bring them around.
Okay.
If you're amused by it, they may feed into that.
Now this show, is it therapeutic in nature? Are you trying to get shy people to come out of their shell? Are you getting people who are arrogant to be kinder? Is there any kind of like philosophical or psychological thing?
There's an artistic point in the nature of, like in that after where people are talking of like figuring out one by, when you're in the show, it feels like it's a real thing that's happening to you, or it can feel like it's a real thing that's happening to you, or it can trigger memories of things you've done before. And when you come out of the show and you compare notes to other people, you start to find that, oh, the things you thought were you were really the structure of the show. And you start to see that, like, oh, sometimes we fall into patterns. So there's that aspect of it.
Okay.
But when it comes to things, you know, there are shows that maybe have a bent towards a therapeutic nature. When it comes to the narrative stuff, this stuff can be... There can be a temptation to do that, and if people are not licensed and they're like doing unlicensed therapy on folks through immersive theater, it's not a good thing. It's a bad sign.
You're saying this is a one-on-one, so you keep saying the word show, but I'm thinking of a one-on-one interaction. But you call it a show because you still...
Yeah, I mean, it's still a performance, right?
Okay.
It's still fiction. It's a fictional experience.
Right. Now, as a woman, are you talking about men that are with her, or is it both?
Both. So anyone in this particular show, anyone buys a ticket, like, doesn't matter if you're a man or woman, you wind up, Emma is the character that you wind up going out with.
I see. So how does that improve? Does it improve people's lives in some way? Does it entertain you? What do you think is the advantage of these immersive? I mean, not just this one, but in general, when we do these kind of things, which is very fascinating, by the way. Yeah. Are there any advantages or benefits?
There's the same way that there's advantages to, like, a book. Like, some books, it's just you were entertained for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. You got to forget about your troubles. Other books inspire you. Other books get you thinking about life in a way that didn't before. Mm-hmm. Same with a play or a movie. Like, mm-hmm. there's nothing with any piece of media or artistic creation. There's... It's not like it's a default. You know, there was this line going around when VR first popped up. It was Chris Melk who referred to it as an empathy machine. Mm. And I would say it's true that virtual reality has some affordances in it that make it possible to go deeper than you would in, say, a television show, because you get to play with people's perspectives. Mm. You get to put them in different relationships to ideas and people than you would otherwise, because you're playing with first-person perspective. Mm. But it isn't baked into the hardware. No more than, you know, a film script doesn't automatically mean that you're going to make people see their lives in a three-act structure or whatever they think.
They have used virtual reality for dealing with phobias. You know, it's called desensitization.
Right.
Where you actually expose yourself to the fear or whatever, you know, like a dog or, you know, a height or something, you know, in terms of virtual reality. It actually has been very effective.
Yeah.
So some of that isn't really helping therapeutically. It has to be used by trained psychologists,
exactly.
You know, people that know what they're doing. But here you're talking more about entertainment, it sounds like. Something that's enjoyable, that people can, you know, go out at a night or something.
On the theatrical side, yeah. But it's not, there's a piece I haven't read about all the way through. Like, it's something that's come across the plate that I haven't delved into. But there's a piece right now in London that apparently is like, even though I don't think there's any drugs involved, they refer to it as being like psychedelic, and they're actually starting to study it. Mm. They're studying it and they're looking at like the psychological effects on it. Mm. There are people who like mine things like the Stanford Prison Experiments to try and figure out like what they can do to create like these social constructs to sort of get people playing Prisoner's Dilemma stuff.
Right.
There's a temptation. And I mean, I think plenty of artists think that like what they're making is transformative. And there's a whole discipline around immersive experiences that are transformative. I would say the degree of difficulty around that is such that, you know, when people are doing that sort of stuff, I would hope that they're thinking very carefully about what effects that they're trying to create. When, with any of this material, when it's done right, you'll find people getting really attached to the characters that they're encountering. Because when it's done right, it is kind of indistinguishable. Like, you wind up, you don't talk about a really good immersive experience like you had seen something. Mm-hmm. You talk about it like you had lived through it. And in the wrong hands, that can be pretty bad.
Yeah.
In the right hands, the right hands can get you opened up and get you thinking.
I think like almost a science fiction TV show like that, I forget what they call it, where people go into this place as some kind of test study and they hook them up to these electrodes. You remember that one?
There's a Netflix show that's like, so I haven't watched it, but I know which one you're talking about.
They turn out to be really weird stuff that happens to them, you know, almost they die or something. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Something kind of crazy.
But. Is that the one,
Room or something? Red Room? Or I don't know. If it
was there's something recently that had Emma Stone and Jonah Hill in it that was on Netflix that I haven't watched.
Kind of weird.
Yeah.
But let me ask you, so this sounds really fascinating. So we're taking a different level, right? This immersive experience.
Mm.
What are some of the good ones or favorite ones? For example, you mentioned escape room. Can you tell us a brief thing what they are? What is an escape room?
What is an escape room? Okay, I mean, escape room is almost like pure entertainment. The idea behind escape room is there's a room full of puzzles, and you're put into it, and you're given, like, a time limit to escape. You got to figure everything out in order to, like, find the key that unlocks the room.
Sounds like fun, but it can be scary if you get trapped in a dungeon mirror or something.
Well, I mean, it depends on the theme of the room. So there are rooms where there's a famous one called The Basement, where you're trapped in a room with a serial killer.
Wow.
There are other ones. There's one, I can't remember its name, where like the conceit is that you're like your dogs. And so like it's a room that's totally themed, like everything's like big and like big dog bowls and stuff like that. There's all kinds of themes. And escape rooms are incredibly popular. There's
wow.
over 100 in LA alone.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, because this takes the, I mean, the mystery murder, you're a bit of those dinner things where there's, it takes it to a higher level, though. Because that way you know they're kind of acting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you don't know who the murderer is.
Right.
But this is like you're actually in a room with murderers. In a dark basement.
Well, I mean, you're
I mean, not really murders, but people act like them.
Yeah. And then it's, I mean, it's the ones that are next. I mean, look, there's a spectrum here. You know, there are things that are done in a very cheesy manner, and it doesn't kind of get you and right. shake you up. There are others where, like, they have lots of skills in terms of, you know, technical creative proficiency, and, like, they create those emotional effects.
Wow.
And then there's other pieces. Like, I mean, my favorite piece, hands down, is a piece called Then She Fell, which is in New York, which is a dance theater piece that has a very high ratio of performers to audience members. So there's, like, 15 audience members to 12 performers. Wow. And it's great. I often liken it to a dark ride at Disneyland, sort of like you're walking around. And so instead of being robots, it's people.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Immersive theme parks, is that the same idea? People jump out at you or something? And
No, I mean, the idea is that you've constructed the world so well that people... It's easier for people to suspend the idea that they're in a theme park, or you've created the interactions, crafted those so well that it doesn't matter that the rest of it's going on. Knott's Berry Farm here in LA, in Orange County, they've got a thing called Ghost Town Live, very popular with kids. Really? They take the old Calico Ghost Town and they put actors in it, and those actors can give the kids like little fetch quests, little things. It's sort of structured like a video game, but you have these little encounters with the actors. Okay. And it's a lot of fun.
Well, think of the Hollywood Haunt. You're not talking about that one, right?
No. That's another thing. Like, but the haunts is a whole other thing. And there are immersive haunts, and there's even extreme immersive haunts. And that's a whole other rabbit hole.
That's fascinating. Yeah. So Noah, where can people get a hold of you to learn more about what you do? Do you have any books or anything? Or
no books, because it's hard enough to keep up the website. There's the website, No Proscenium, like the Proscenium Arch in a Theater, noproscenium.com. Uh-huh. There's also a Facebook group, which is probably the easiest thing to remember. If you go to everythingimmersive.com, you'll reroute to the Facebook group, and there you'll sort of encounter over 5,000 people from around the world for whom this is their passion.
So this is more of a, like a group kind of organizational kind of thing where people, you know, connect with each other based on this passion?
The Facebook group is a Facebook group, and people do that. There's a lot of levels to it. The NoPro is a website. It's a podcast. It's a newsletter. We put newsletters out every 2 weeks in New York and LA. We put one out every week for North America, and that's just the raw listings. The podcast where we talk with the practitioners. We do interviews, reviews of stuff. We've got people in here in LA, New York, Chicago, San Francisco, London. We have correspondents like all around the world.
That's fantastic. Well, no, it's been a pleasure having you on board. You seem like a very intelligent, erudite gentleman.
Oh, thank you.
Some of the terms you use are very, very scientific, but we like that, you know. We like to learn.
Yeah.
So Love University is about expressing love and positive energy and also growing our minds.
Great.
That's the ultimate. So we'd love to have you back on maybe at another time, you know, and talk about other things that are interesting in this area.
Yeah.
So again, this is Dr. Alex Avila, Love University. We're here live at the USC Festival of Books. A lot of people are coming by. We're having a lot of fun. We just enjoyed Noah. So until next time, this is Dr. Alex Avila, Love University. Put away your pens and books. You can visit us at loveuniversity.love, and we'll see you next time.